This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. I'm John Williams. Pete Zimmerman's the producer, as always. Okay, so an amended schedule today. Let's jump in. Neil Byers, the owner of Horse Thief Hollow. This is in the Beverly neighborhood as our Your Hometown series shines on Beverly today. Hey, Neil, welcome to WGN. How are you?
Hey, John. I'm doing great. How are you?
Pretty good. You might get bumped here by the President of the United States during his press conference, so let's...
You're not going to wait for me?
I think some people would prefer. You got a pretty good place there. Tell me about your brew.
Horse Thief Hollow. We've been open for 8 years. We have a scratch kitchen that features Southern influenced cuisine and then a very diverse beer collection. Pale ales and IPAs, pilsners, barrel-aged stuff. So, yeah, it's been going great lately.
Why is it called Horse Thief Hollow?
Horse Thief Hollow was the nickname of Beverly before Beverly was developed in the 1880s. So horse thieves would come up from Missouri. They would kind of hide out in the hollers and draws. And then the horses would bring their stolen horses downtown to sell them. Boy. And so it was just kind of a nickname. And then state militia came in and started clearing out the activity, and that's when Beverly began developing.
I did not know Horse Thief Hollow is what Beverly was before it was Beverly. You said just a minute ago...
The first chop shop of Chicago.
Yeah, right. So yeah. You actually alluded to the fact that maybe business has been, what, good or bad in the last 12 months?
It was very difficult for the last 12 months, but ever since we were allowed to do some indoor dining, things have been picking up. The neighborhood's been incredibly supportive. As they always have been. There's light at the end of the tunnel for sure.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing. Tell me about your beers. What's your best seller? What do folks know you for?
Well, last year we won a bronze for our Pilsner called Little Wing, bronze in the Great American Beer Festival, and we won a gold medal for a Belgian triple that was barrel-aged in Pinot Noir barrels, and that was in the Festival of Barrel-Aged Beers. So those two are probably my favorite right now. Spoonful of Hazy IPA is standby. That's one of the number one sellers as well.
Boy, this town is just nuts for its craft brews. It must be a very competitive space for somebody like you, Neil.
I mean, certainly competitive, but also collaborative. And we're lucky to have Open Outcry down the street and some other breweries on the south side all working together. We support each other. We create and innovate together. So it's competitive, but it's rewarding as well and supportive.
You're not the first brewer in town to tell me that. Competitive, but really cooperative, too. And is a beer on the south side a little different because it's a different neighborhood than a beer on the west side or the north side? Is there an essence or a flavor for the Beverly area?
That's a great question. I'm very proud of what we do. We make some world-class beers. But I think it's the ambiance as a whole that kind of drives the experience and how you perceive the beer. We have great diversity and the clientele and our menu offering on the food and the music and the artwork that we support with the Art Alliance.
Yeah.
So you come in here and you see the whole picture and kind of gives you a good perspective on the flavors of the beer.
A beer aged in the wine barrel sure sounds good to me. I think I'll take a liter of that. Do you sell it by the jug? What do you call those things? The handles?
A growler.
Growler, yeah.
We actually bottled this one. It turned out so well that we bottled it and, like I said, entered into that competition where it won the gold. And then it sold out almost immediately. But I think I have two bottles left, so I'll bring one.
Well, you save that for your best customer, and I'll be one soon. It's nice to talk to you today. Neil Byers is the owner of Horse Thief Hollow. HorseThiefBrewing.com is where you check their stuff out. Good luck to you, Neil. Thanks for your time, and thanks for joining us today.
Thanks a lot, John. Take care.
Good sense of humor, and sounds like a pretty good business. It's 12:19 on WGN. The president not yet speaking. Ian Schur is from CNET.com. Hi, Ian. Welcome to the show.
I hope I can live up to what the president isn't doing yet.
Listen, I'm not going to make a statement about the president per se, but how is it that when you have your very first press conference scheduled at 12:15, it's now 12:20 and you aren't speaking yet? He should be on time.
Well, clearly he wants to listen to us first.
So let's talk about Twitter, because I understood you could undo a tweet. Now I have to pay to undo a tweet?
Well, actually, the only way you could undo a tweet before was with the delete button. What's happening now is that Twitter apparently is testing an idea of having you pay to have kind of a undo option for like 30 seconds, right? So if any of you use Gmail's undo function, which, by the way, is my favorite part of Gmail, it's probably one of the best technology inventions in years, where literally it gives you like 30 seconds or a minute to press undo after you press send. I do it all the time. I don't know why, but like I think of something after I press send, I'm like, oh, and I push the button and I add something. So Twitter wants to do a similar thing, but they want you to pay a subscription fee. Now, it wouldn't just be to undo. They would also do stuff like have access to different newsletters by your favorite tweeters and stuff like that. But, you know, the undo button would certainly be one of those bullet points of why you would pay. I don't know whether people are going to actually like that. A lot of us are asking for an edit button, which would allow us to change something, you know, after the fact, like if I wrote Covfefe and didn't realize it until much later. But that's, here we are.
But with these two features you just described, is it essentially a buffer then for 30 seconds before it gets posted? Is that what you're saying?
Essentially, yeah. It's basically a delay timer, which, again, I think is a smart thing. You know, a lot of what we've learned about how people work is that, generally speaking, you know, we'll type something out. I see a lot of friends don't check spell check before they press send, or they don't read it enough before they realize that it was actually the wrong word put in there by the autocorrect. So a lot of those things, you know, it happens after you press send for some reason. There's something psychological happening. And so it would help to have that extra 30-second buffer to change out a word if you have to.
If I delete something, though, and nobody's taken a screen grab of it, have I captured it and removed it, or does it automatically go into some warehouse and everybody has access to it?
Well, it is in a warehouse somewhere, that's for sure. You know, Twitter hasn't really made it clear exactly how they make sure whether or not something is deleted is actually deleted, because you know, it's always possible for someone to be copying everything out of Twitter, right? There is a way to do that if you wanted to, and actually a lot of people did that with President Donald Trump's tweets, even though supposedly they're being archived by the government anyway. So I would say that, you know, the idea that once it leaves your head, it's on the internet forever, you should always assume that, which is why the undo button would be really great before it actually got into the Twitter stream.
At least it would give you a half a minute or so before it becomes that. Jack Dorsey's first tweet has sold for how much?
Too much. $2.9 million, which is just, I mean, first off, I would like to auction off my own first tweet. I'm sure I would get nothing. But, yeah, it's his tweet that very famously says, setting up my Twitter without any vowels. And, you know, this is one of those things that's getting really interesting. There's this whole new idea out there that's getting a lot of attention called non-fungible tokens. Essentially, think of them like digital collector cards, right? You probably have friends who have collected stamps or baseball cards. This is a computer version of that. So even though I can copy a song or a piece of art a million times on the internet because it's all ones and zeros, it doesn't lose quality when I copy it. When it comes to owning it, right, supposedly this whole idea of these non-fungible tokens would allow me, NFTs, to kind of own it in the same way I would own a collector card. And I could sell it to someone else. They would have this only version of it. And for some reason, that would have value. The art world is gaga over this because it's a way for them to make more money. But it's an interesting idea. I don't know if it's a huge bubble and crazy or if there's actually something to it. But we do have an explainer on CNET if you still don't fully get it, which I have to be honest, I don't even have my head fully wrapped around it yet.
I'm really glad you do that because I don't either. And yet I just interviewed Nathan Apodaca, the skateboarder who on TikTok had that Fleetwood Mac video. And he's a fun, funny guy, but he's hoping to start the bidding at $500,000 on Saturday for the NFT of his video. And who knows what the world's going to give him, right?
I mean, it's a good video.
Yeah, but $500,000 for the ones and O's that it represents.
That's the weird part about the internet sometimes. I remember when someone sold an air guitar on eBay, right? That happens.
You have an article on CNET.com. Ian Schur's on a line with us, the president not yet speaking. Gen Z is getting screwed by remote work. What are you talking about?
Yeah, Microsoft did this enormous survey, more than 31,000 people around the world. And one of the things that they found was that Gen Z workers are very anxious about work these days. Now, of course, we all are on some level. But the reason that they are is that they are actually not getting those early start work experiences that we all did when we were starting. So you have to think Gen Z is just entering the workforce. These are people who were born in the mid-90s, which, yes, that means we're all a lot older than we think. And what's interesting about it is that, you know, they're working online, they're working through video, and I've actually talked to a number of them, and they say, look, I don't get very much interaction with my boss. I don't have interaction with my team. I don't really know what I'm supposed to do. I don't have those opportunities to jump on a project because I'm not in the hallway, and suddenly someone says, hey, you could do that. All of those things that helped us get our career kickstarted is not happening with Gen Z right now because of the digital thing. And more so, if we're going to keep these remote work options, which 73% of us, according to the Microsoft survey, say we want to keep, then that means Gen Z's going to have a harder time to kickstart their careers. So Microsoft says we need to really think about how to invest in helping them get their careers started, because otherwise there's going to be a whole generation of people who have a really tough time getting started just because we're doing remote work.
Maybe competing then with the generation that preceded them, the one that comes before or after them, that panel of age group employees will lack some social or professional skills.
Well, it could be that. I think what hopefully will happen is that as we're figuring out video chat and video work and remote work and all this, is that we're going to find ways to kind of bridge the digital and real world, right? And one of those ways is through all these chat functions that we have, which are annoying as heck, but hopefully corporate cultures will get better about them. And I think also that if the career people in these companies, right, yeah, in the HR departments, build new systems to help people with mentorship and all the stuff that, you know, used to happen just ad hoc, then it might be able to solve the problem. But
Ian
Microsoft
Scherr
says they don't have all the answers.
An editor over at CNET. Nice to talk to you today, Ian. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.